think are the key things that might draw this graph? Could you draw that graph between now and 2050, and how would you draw it? Would it be a flat line? Would it be a rising line? Would it be a declining line? Would it be a wobbly, wavy line? And why? And that might be an interesting exercise to do for yourself. Draw that line and ask yourself, why did I draw it that way? And how do I feel about what I've drawn as well? But, so I was going to let you have a chance to talk about this, and one of the things that I'm guessing some of you are thinking to explain what has happened in the last 2 or 3 years is a very close relationship between conflict and food insecurity. And there are a number of places in the world at the moment suffering absolutely crippling hunger as a result of conflict. So, Yemen, South Sudan, Congo, Syria, Afghanistan, places that you hear in the news, you know these are places that are deeply troubled, you know these are places producing large numbers of refugees, you know these are places with lots of expensive military gear, but you don't tend to hear so much about the really crippling hunger which disproportionately affects older people, women, children, marginalised groups. So in Yemen, it's more than 10 million people in absolutely crippling hunger at the moment. So not that far off half of Australia's population. Not that it's in our news all that much. So this is clearly one of the factors. This is a map of undernutrition around the world, and we're going to be unpacking this in week 3. So I'm not doing any more now than just kind of giving you something to think about. But that hunger that we looked at is very uneven. So as a geographer, I'm really interested in maps like this. This is my kind of bread and butter for understanding the world. If we had one colour all over the world, then food security wouldn't particularly perhaps be an issue for geographers to get concerned about. But when you see this, when you see such a stark pattern of unevenness, you cannot understand this unless you have some understanding of geography. And if you have the view that, oh, well, so let's have a look here. So sub-Saharan Africa, well, it's just not a good environment for food. Poor soils, no rain, not a very conducive environment for food. People who live there have always been hungry, and the problem is that there's been population growth, and for some reason we gave them aid or something, and these people had babies, and now, sadly, everyone's hungry. So I did say you need to push back on me. I did say that I would interpret things, so I cannot help myself but be provocative. If that's what you think, you're wrong. And I really look forward to explaining why you're wrong in seeing the world that way. Which is not to say that environmental factors and rainfall and soil type and geomorphology and so on aren't important. They are crucially important. Agriculture happens in certain parts of the world for very good environmental, physical reasons. But that doesn't explain this very much. And in fact, large parts of equatorial Africa have very high levels of rainfall, large forests, huge rivers, and there's a great many hungry people in those places, like the Congo, for example. This is a map of anemia. I put some data up a moment ago about anemia. This is women of reproductive age. I don't know if any of you have been anemic. I had a colleague recently who was anemic, didn't know that. She went and had a blood transfusion. Her whole life, everything about her changed overnight. It's a very foggy condition to be in, as well as very dangerous, especially if you're pregnant. So these are the percentages. So the darker colours here are 30 to 40, and then 40 to 70% of the population of reproductive women with anemia. This is food security, because where do you get your iron if not from your diet? So there's a lot for us to grapple with, and I do totally appreciate that a lot of what I've just put up and presented is confronting. But it's not confronting because I or the people who wrote the graphs wanted to be confronting. That is actually the world that we're all in. All we've done is allow that world into the room. But the purpose of education is to empower ourselves and empower our society. So if you're feeling just disempowered by this, then try and find the pathway to your learning that will enable you to see how you can contribute, because that's what learning is for. There is no value in just hearing bad news as if it stops there, which is unfortunately a lot of what our media does. This is not what we're doing in this room. We're trying to develop skills, capacities, and professions to bring about positive change. I haven't said too much about what that looks like today, but that is part of the task that we have in this unit. If we don't pull it off, you must hold us to account when you write your surveys at the end of semester. So we've got this recent problem that hunger has been increasing, but there's this longer persistence of hunger, and this quote here that hunger persists because of poverty. There's, again, complexity here, but that's not a bad take-home message for today. So let's just do this very quickly. Those of you that might have been in a lecture with me the other day will have seen this. But so we've been talking about hunger, but now just let's talk about money for a second. The relationship between food and money is not straightforward. But let's just talk about money for a second. If we took every adult around the world and asked what is their wealth, their private wealth, so their possessions, their property, if they own property, their houses, what would that be on average around the world, do you reckon? So if you've got a household, you've got, say, two people, you'd have double this amount of money. So this is per person. What do you think that is, roughly?